Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, a podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And over there, we got sleepy Casey Clapp.
How's it going, Jack?
Hi, Casey.
Hi, Alex. I appreciate you calling me sleepy because I was yawning just then.
Yes.
And that's why I picked up this cup of coffee in this Merino.
Yes, it says Merino.
Why does it say Merino? This cup with a tree on it, it's very southwestern color.
Yes, well, I believe I got that at a Goodwill, and I think my theory is that that is a souvenir cup. You know when you go to souvenir shops and they have different names on things?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So someone named Mary visited Reno.
I see, okay.
And bought the littlest, biggest mug of her life. What is that?
Good one. The biggest little mug of her life.
The biggest little mug of her life. Well, Casey, today we're not going to Reno.
No, we're not.
We're going a little further south.
That's right.
We are going to Brazil.
Uh-huh.
Brazil.
That was beautiful. I didn't know you're such a crooner.
Oh, or what?
It could also be Bolivia. No, a couple other places.
All right.
You know, it doesn't have to be Brazil.
Well, I say Brazil specifically because the name of our tree today is the Brazil nut.
Yes, it
not
is.
Not called the
Alex.
Bolivia nut.
Uh-huh. That's true. It's not. Yeah.
Well, that's right, Casey. Today we're talking Brazil nut.
That's true, Alex. And this is actually in conjunction. Is this our first time doing this?
What?
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
I
yeah,
agree.
I believe so.
Yeah, we were on a podcast recently. You guys might have heard it. It's called Wild Green Streams by Wild Green Memes for Ecological Fiends.
Wow.
Yeah, well done, Casey. Thank you, Casey.
I think it was good, too.
yeah, so they are, some lovely folks reached out and said, hey, we think you guys are hilarious. And we're like, we think you're hilarious. Let's do some together. And then they gave us a little interview the other day.
That's right.
On the West Coast is where we are. They were on the East Coast, and they interviewed us, or we all sat down and chatted for like an hour at 5 o'clock our time, 8 o'clock their time.
Yeah.
We got done when it was 9 o'clock their time, and then they packed and drove to do a 50-mile bike ride the next day. At least one of them, Rhett of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Mind-blowing, but good for them.
It was a great chat, Case.
It really
Rhett
was.
And Danielle from that podcast. And we talked about a little bit. We talked about the Brazil nut.
Yeah, it was pretty much the last half of, not the last half, but a significant portion at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And we chatted because they're involved with a great organization down there. And so they started telling us a little bit about their work and the Brazil nut. And I distinctly said in this episode, Alex, move this tree up in our list of trees to cover.
That's right, yeah.
And then it just so happened they were like, they're running a really cool fundraising event. And they just put it out. So we said, hey, let's just do it right now.
That's right. Yeah, this is one of our most timely episodes ever.
Exactly, which is great. You know, it's when things just come together. It's when a plan comes together, Alex.
I love me some synergy, Casey.
Beautiful.
Or should I say synergy?
Wow.
Hey, you know what? Before we get to this week's tree, we got to take a break. And before we do that, we got to say, hey, if you want to support this podcast, if you love this podcast,
if you want to hear more of this podcast,
that's right. If you want to hear stuff that is exclusive and the public doesn't get to hear,
yeah.
If you want monthly cone stickers,
plebeians,
if you want to feel like you're a member of the Senate, you know, like the old Senate.
You know, all you got to do is just join Tremium to become a patrician class.
That's right. Thank you, Casey. Thank you for localizing it.
You're welcome.
That's right. Join Completely Arbitrary Tremium at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. We got a couple different plans there. You can gift subscriptions. You can pay for a year. And you get so much cool stuff, and you support the show. All of our supporters mean so much to us and really keep the lights on. Hey, I mean that literally.
Yes, yeah.
That's right. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com to support the show. Become a Tremium member, and we will be right back with the Brazil nut after this. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
It sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses mm-hmm. is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well,
the
these
glare
would be great
goes
for,
away.
These would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the Brazil nut. Scientific name, Casey?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Alex. It is Bertholletia excelsior.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Hold on. Yeah. Bertholletia?
That's right.
Excelsior?
That is correct.
Wow, what a great name. Now, Casey, what does the excelsior mean?
It essentially means like royal or okay. Like really big and like fancy. You
sure,
know?
Sure.
It's
okay.
Like, this is excellence.
Best. Sure. Yeah. Okay, all right.
So, of course, the European ash is Fraxinus excelsior.
I gotcha. Interesting. Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through a big Brazilian, I'll say, rainforest.
Yeah, like an Amazonian rainforest. Mm-hmm.
I am being eaten to death by insects. You are in your natural habitat. I've got my onesie of net, you know?
Yeah, okay, I do. I now know.
And we come across some Brazil nut trees. Let's ID this tree.
So this is a big, big tree.
Wow.
This is the rainforest tree that I think probably gets, not this one, but it's the kind that gets the most press because it's what's called an emergent tree.
Wow.
Now, I think we've talked about this a few times, but emergent trees in any real forest ecosystem, but specifically, it's a reference to tropical forests where you have a canopy that's a certain like kind of uniform height. And then there's one tree that's like head and shoulders above all the rest.
Not even just like competes really well and is a little taller.
Yeah.
But it like shoots out of it like a rocket.
Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, that is like, it's starkly different.
And what is that called now?
It's an emergent tree.
Emergent tree.
Yeah.
Okay.
So an emergent canopy tree.
So it is a forest tree. It would be growing deep in the forest.
Yes.
But it just decides to grow like 20 feet taller.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. It gets up to like 160 feet tall.
Damn.
50 meters. And it has a straight stem. Like it just goes straight up.
Very conifer-like.
Yeah, very conifer-like, one single stem. And then, as it was described actually by Rhett and Danielle, it looks like just a huge plop of hair on top of a very straight central stem.
Yeah.
I believe they described it as Einstein's hair, just going boing,
sure,
out in every direction.
That's my goal.
Yeah, you're going to look great when you get there.
I will end up looking like Larry David at some point in my life. Just a ring of curly white hair, and I cannot wait.
The one last thing that I should note about the stem, Alex, is that it has no buttressed roots. Like, it doesn't create those big, giant buttressing sides like some trees.
Just goes straight into the ground.
Exactly. Now, I'm sure at the bottom it goes a little bit like, whoop, and kind of angles out.
Yeah.
But it's not like the trees that we've covered before that have these massive, big, tropical things that come down. Like the classic things you see orangutans and chimps like hitting on to, like, you know, make noise and scare the things around.
Interesting. I would think that for such a tall tree, a buttress base would be a boon.
You think so, but who knows?
Say that five times fast.
I think for a buttress tree, I'm not going to do it.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, just one big tall stem.
One big tall stem covered in nice gray bark with deep fissures in it that kind of go very longitudinally, north and south, right?
The bark is just okay.
It's not great. It doesn't like really jump out at you, right?
It's a little utility looking.
It's a little utility. So let's just skip past it. Let's talk about the things that are more interesting, the leaves.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to go up in interest level one by one by one.
Okay, Casey, this is a crescendo of interesting parts.
I was thinking the same thing, but I was thinking the... what is that old
Thus Spake Zarathustra.
Wow.
From 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, good work. Okay, yeah. So it's like that. That's what I was imagining. So bark, it's pretty flat.
Yeah. Sure.
The leaves, they're simple. They're alternate. They're oblong. 14 inches long. Great. Like, they don't really jump out at me. Like, honestly, these leaves are like, they're pretty big. They're good size. They're curious looking. They get, they're like leathery. They have smooth margins. So, but they're just kind of like normally the leaves. Like, they're not split in any funny way.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything. They're just very like normal run-of-the-mill minivan leaves.
Can I go so far as to suggest that these are utility leaves?
You can.
Utility tropical leaves, which are a little more interesting than utility, you know, temperate leaves.
Yeah.
Say.
And so that gets us like,
that's the third.
Exactly.
And up on the fifth is
the flowers.
Yeah.
Now, the flowers are probably, I have to say, I might think the flowers are a little more interesting than the fruit, but I think that would be disingenuous because the fruit is also quite curious. So the flowers are born in these little, like, long spikes.
Yeah.
And so a spike, you'll recall, is basically an unbranched stem that has little flowers on it, left and right, all kind of spiraling up most of the time.
Okay.
But they are not like panicles or racemes where they have like branches that come out. So they're not these big, huge things. They're very simple, comparatively speaking.
Mm.
Every now and then, they will have one little spike coming out from the axle of the leaf. And the axle of the leaf is essentially the armpit between the leaf and the actual stem that the leaf is attached
sure.
to. So that is where you get one coming out. More often, though, they come out terminally at the end of a twig, and they have maybe three little spikes that pop out, one up and then two kind of on the sides.
Mm.
Then they put out these adorable little flowers. They're kind of yellowish, a little bit whitish, sometimes have a little bit of a pink tinge to them, but they are uniquely, like, kind of bulbous looking. Like, they look, there's a mushroom called a ground flower, I believe is what it is, something like that. And it looks like a big kind of central puff. And then it has these, maybe ground star, excuse me, is what it is called. And it has like this central kind of circle. And then on the outside, it looks like these petals kind of open up.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of what the flowers look like.
Okay.
But the petals are rounded. And it is it has symmetry that is similar to a pea flower or something, where it's kind of vertical symmetry, where if you cut it down the middle vertically, the left side and the right side are symmetrical. If you do it horizontally, the top and the bottom are not symmetrical. But it has this big P piece of a petal, an appendage that comes up and curves over.
Just one?
It's just this one big thing that pops out. And if you look up so if you want to see what this looks like, dear listener, go to our website, go to our second little link there that says the Brazil nut tree information sheet. And it's got this really cool information sheet by the New York Botanical Gardens. And the photos in it show exactly what I'm talking about. So the flowers open up between 4:30 and 5 a.m. in the morning. And they only do it during certain times of the year. They start doing it during the dry season and into the wet season. And this is kind of interesting because it takes, like, the tree does the flowering, and then as it goes from the rainy season to the dry season, it starts to lose its leaves. And then it puts on a new flush of leaves a little bit later, but it doesn't, it kind of has the same seasonality that you'd have, but it isn't quite like it drops all of its leaves and then has no leaves all the time. It kind of just does this very slow cycle over the course of a whole year.
Interesting.
Now, the thing about this is that as these flowers are opening, right before they're like officially open, the anthers, the pollen producing little bits, they start to like push out that pollen. It starts to happen. So you get this kind of like pollen inside of this weird cup in this appendage.
What the fuck?
It is specifically designed so that only certain insects or animals, broadly speaking, can get in and actually pull and squeeze their bodies into this kind of cupped chamber, which is the inside of the flower where the pollen is basically just like starting to come out and just really starting to kind of fall into this area.
And it's like kind of collecting in there?
I believe so, okay. Yeah. So as it is starting to happen, bees, bumblebees specifically, like big, strong, large insects, are only the things that are tough enough and strong enough to actually pull back or force their bodies into this, like this, or at least force it beyond this fun little like appendage on the flower.
How strange.
Yeah. They get in there, they pollinate it, they get some nectar, and they get covered in all their pollen, and they fly over, and then they have to do it to another one. So certain insects can't get in there. So the pollinators, the pollination is very specific. It's not something like a fig where there is one species that's able to do it and it's very specialized. Mm-hmm. This is more like a few larger bumblebee species are able to get in there, but none others. No other smaller, less strong insects.
Why wouldn't a tree, and I'm going to use humanizing language here. Uh-huh. Why wouldn't a tree want to be more generalized in terms of the things that can use it for pollination?
You know, that's a very good question. I don't officially know.
Like, why the bar of entry?
Yeah, right. I would be willing to bet that it is specialized because these bees are like big and strong and can fly certain distances. Mm. And we know that these same insects like have other parts of their life cycle that have to do with other parts of the forest. And this is something that's unique about the Brazil nut tree, is that it does not grow in big groves. Like, you'd see a tree here and then like a couple feet away, or maybe like on the other side of a little walkway, there's another big tree. They grow like a third of a mile apart.
Wow.
Sometimes you can find them closer, but generally speaking, trees, not only the Brazil nut tree, but lots of different tropical trees in this area, grow upwards of like a quarter mile away.
Interesting. So, okay, so you want a big, strong insect.
Yeah.
It's not like wind dispersal where it just needs to onto the tree next to it.
Yeah, precisely.
It needs to get it there.
It's got to get it there.
It's like giving the ring to the eagles. Just get it there.
Just go to the next tree, eagles.
Well, Casey, let's move on from the flowers.
Let's
as
move
interesting
on to flowers.
As they are, that's not why we're here today.
Not quite.
We're here for the fruit.
Uh-huh.
And what we call the Brazil nut.
Right.
Let's talk about it.
Well, I notice in your inflection that you already are already aware it's not actually a nut.
It's a seed.
It is a seed.
But culinarily, we would call it a nut.
Exactly. The
which
way
is
we
its,
call it
its primary use, right?
Exactly.
Is to be eaten.
Exactly. Those are, for those of you who are like, a Brazil nut, I've never had one. I bet you have. If you go to your local market and you get yourself a, you go to the bulk section.
Yeah.
You open up that little thing that's really fun to pull, and then you realize you got way too much and you have to shut it really fast. And you're like, oh my God.
This is mixed nuts.
You're getting mixed nuts.
Yeah.
This is those big, giant, juicy ones that are like so oily where you're like, what the hell is this?
Where only your fathers or grandfathers like to eat them.
Yeah,
it's their
exactly.
favorite one. But yes, the Brazil nut are these big, you know, Hey Arnold head shaped.
Yeah, they're chonkers, aren't
nuts.
They?
I mean, gosh, a Brazil nut, maybe an inch long.
Yeah.
Half
easily.
An inch thick. And you bite into it and it basically leaks down your chin with oil.
Nice. Yeah, people are going to be into it after this.
It's not my favorite eating experience of a nut. It's not great.
It's not, but it's got a lot of good oil. It's something like 80% fat and protein.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, very good, healthy nut.
I said this to Rhett and Danielle from Wild Green Streams that when you eat a Brazil nut, you can tell right away that it's like a superfood.
Yeah, right.
In the way that like when you eat an avocado, you're like, oh, this is, I guess it's the fats. You know, you're like, wow, this is fatty. Brazil nuts.
A fatty.
You can tell they're healthy.
They are. But they do have apparently a lot of selenium in there as well, which is a thing that we need. Like, it's a thing that you want to eat. Great, you got some. Mm-hmm. But if you have too much of it, or another, I think it's barium, it actually will cause fingernail and hair loss.
Wow.
It's essentially like poison yourself or like stop the creation of, I think it's keratin that you'd have. I think that's it. I think that's what your fingernails and things are made of.
That's a good lesson. It's like, you know, it might be healthy, but if you have too much of a good thing,
exactly,
you'll lose your hair.
You're going to lose your hair.
So Casey, let's talk about the fruit, the body in which holds, the vessel which holds these nuts.
It is a capsule, Alex.
Ah, a capsule.
Yes, it's a capsule that is a hard woody capsule that's filled with anywhere between, I think, about 10 to 24, 25 individual seeds.
Oh.
Now, there's one flower. That one flower has 10 to 25 ovules in one ovary. So remember that the fruit is a mature ovary.
Okay.
So that mature ovary is this big baseball size, upwards of like 6 inches. Like, you can get up to like the size of a softball. Yeah. We're going up a level. Those are huge, huge things. And they're heavy.
Yeah, like,
they can hit you in the head and knock you out.
These are widowmakers for sure.
They really are. So
maybe ex-girlfriend makers. You know, they're not quite.
It's because you develop a baseball size knot on your head when it hits.
They'll give you a goose egg, but they're probably not going to kill you.
I don't think so. Yeah, they're just
Coulter pine cone would.
Exactly, they're not spiky.
No.
Yeah, they're very hard.
They look just like a little coconut.
They do. Yeah. In fact, they call them cocos, I believe.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Got a nice little husky brown exterior.
Yeah, and they got a little tiny hole at the very bottom.
Yeah, what's that hole about?
I believe that hole develops because that's where it is connected to the like actual bit of the plant. So that would be essentially the receptacle.
Okay, so when that falls off, it leaves a little hole.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it falls down to the ground, and then this is where it gets fun. These gigantic seeds inside this really hard husk have individually hard exterior bits around the seed. So the seed coat is very, very hard as well.
Okay.
So it takes a very specific kind of animal to gnaw through that hard husk. It's an agouti is what it's called.
Oh my gosh.
They're basically like giant long-legged guinea pigs.
Oh.
They're, I believe, the biggest rodent. I think so. I think that's the case. And these agoutis go down and scratch using their big giant incisors into the thing, into that baseball. They pull out the 10 to 25 seeds and they eat some.
I will say an agouti is not quite as adorable as I thought it was going to be.
You mean you don't think it's a cutie?
This agouti ain't no cutie. I would say it's more of a giant rat.
Wow, that's so mean.
Some people love rats.
Fine, I get it. Okay, cool.
Like the rat queen.
The rat queen.
So yeah, they get in. They get in there. They do. They're sort of they look like pods. Like I'm trying to think of what they look like. Mm. They're very interestingly also organized.
Yeah, they look like wedges of oranges.
Totally. Yeah.
But it's like you have a middle wedge with a smaller wedge on top and a smaller wedge on bottom. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like wedges. Inside wedges.
Within wedges.
Exactly.
It's one of those how many triangles do you see things.
It totally is, yeah. So these agoutis, though, and other rodents, they will eat it, but then they will take others and they will hide them in little middens, and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to save you for later.
Wow. And little what?
Middens, M-I-D-D-E-N-S.
What is that?
It's like where a mouse would hide its stuff. It's like a little cache of seeds and things called a midden.
I like the idea of a mouse using a mitten as a midden.
Oh,
keeps
that is
all of
adorable.
Its little Brazil nuts in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's just imagine that for a moment. Get this agouti out of my head.
Wow. Okay. Fine. Let's give the let's just say it's a mouse that's doing it this whole time.
Well, Casey, yeah, that's the nut. I mean, that's the seed, rather. That's the nut.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
You know
that's
what?
The nut of the seed.
I'm gonna get on an apple box real fast
God.
Here.
God.
I don't have any problem with people misusing the word nut as a botanical thing.
Okay.
It's perfectly fine. Because it's not like out of nowhere. It's from a different, genre of classification called culinary, culinetics.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like, we call that a nut.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like crazy to call this a nut.
I think that's fair.
It's completely reasonable.
I don't disagree.
And I don't want to be the guy who goes, actually, that's a seed.
But those guys are so much fun.
Well, that's only because you are one that you think that.
Fine. Okay. I look in the mirror and I'm like, you're a fun guy. You're a fun guy, Casey.
But anyhow, I'm stepping off the apple box. That's our Brazil nut tree, a fine specimen.
It's a fine specimen of a tree. I really want to see some like in their natural habitat because, Alex, did you know? In fact, you do know because we talked about this.
Yes.
They are one of the few species that are commercially wildly important across the world. They are exported, these Brazil nuts,
mm-hmm.
all over the world. Oh my God. Alex, I need to tell you something.
Oh my God.
Rhett, Danielle, this is directly to you.
Holy shit.
Our podcast, your podcast regrets my error. Can I say that?
Oh, Casey made a bit of a gaffe.
I did.
Go ahead.
I said at the end of our episode,
put this sign around your neck that says
green,
liar.
Yeah, wild green streams. That's on me. I said that Brazil, the country, is mm-hmm. named after the Brazil nut.
Right.
It's actually named after Brazil wood.
Yes.
And I'm sorry.
Well, what tree does Brazil wood come from?
The Brazil wood tree.
The Brazil wood
exactly.
tree.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a completely different species of tree that creates this really intense, beautiful kind of wood. And they initially saw that in Brazil and said, well, that great. This kind of tree grows in this space. And then that's where the name came from.
This is Brazil now.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, it's not the nuts, the wood.
Named by the Portuguese.
Yeah, the Portuguese were the initial colonizers who went down there.
Yeah.
And still to this day, the language of Brazil is Portuguese.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, now back on track. So this is a tree exported all over the world, whether it's seeds, nuts are.
Mm-hmm.
And as a species, it does not grow well in plantations.
Oh.
So,
oh wow!
You remember when we talked about almonds, right? Do you remember how we grow almonds here in the United States? Certainly,
in giant matrix style, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, with the
farms.
Probe droids coming over and uh-huh. sucking off all the different fruit from the thing.
Yeah, so that's an almond plantation.
Yeah,
it's like an orchard, I guess.
Exactly, it's a gigantic orchard.
It's like
plantation.
Factory farming for trees.
Precisely.
And the Brazil nut is an interesting case because doesn't grow well in plantations.
Does
it
not.
Needs to be a quarter mile away from its neighbor.
Exactly.
But it is such a sought after commodity
mm-hmm.
for some reason. It's kind of an oxymoron. It's kind of the tree is doing it on its own terms, you know,
exactly,
which I like
yeah.
that.
And because that of that, like the tree basically saying, no, I'm not going to grow. Like, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to grow them apart. And remember when we were talking about that bee, the bees rather, because it's multiple different species that do this, that can actually get into the flower. They also require other things in the forest for other parts of their life cycles. So you cannot have one tree growing next to 1,000 other trees that have no other forest around them.
Sure. Just doesn't grow that way.
It doesn't grow. It's not pollinated.
Hell no, we won't grow, says the Brazil nut
tree. The Brazil nut. Yep. What a protest song.
I love it.
So all these things combine, Alex, so that the tree itself must be grown and the nuts harvested from wild, intact forests with groves of trees that are essentially natural, large, tropical, native forest tracts.
I love it. I want to say that I love this system because we've talked about the difference between, like, you know, a plantation is not a forest.
Yes,
right?
Yeah,
like,
correct.
A forest isn't just trees. There's like a million things happening.
Yeah.
And the way they all interact and live together and support each other's life cycles is what makes it a forest.
Yeah, precisely.
So the fact that we have to kind of play on the tree's terms and let it live in a forest, which is so much more than a plantation, I think is really nice.
Yes, and I just could not agree more. And this is an instance where the indigenous peoples, most of the time, who live in these forest systems are managing these trees so that they would go out and they'd collect a certain amount, almost all. And these trees can produce like up to 216 individual pods, each within like 10 to 25 individual seeds inside.
Yeah.
So one individual tree can produce a lot. They go out, they collect all these things, and then they mash the things up and they pull out all the seeds and then they can send those out. They also eat them. It's a very important part of their diet.
Sure.
But there's two things that came to my mind when we were talking about this with Rhett and Danielle.
Interesting.
The first we talked about on their show a little bit, which is the fact that these trees are, now to think about it, both of these things came up. But one I had to research in one of my favorite books. You know about this book. It's called The Tree by Colin Touch.
That's right.
The other thing is in a book that we both bought right after we talked about this called 1491.
Yeah.
By Mann, I believe, is the author's last name. So this is essentially this new age, I say new age idea. Really, it's just everyone being like, shut the hell up, Europeans. About the fact that these trees grow so far away from each other that people had to come up with reasons as to why. Like, why are we seeing that certain trees are growing up to and no less than a third or a quarter of a mile away from other individuals?
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of different reasons scientifically that like this would develop naturally. And that was one thing that I was like, hold on, I have to remember this. And I went back to The Tree by Colin Touch because I remember reading about this. And it's essentially why and how, what is the mechanism to create such diversity in tropical forest ecosystems? And he does this fantastic like comparative like whole chapter of like 20 or 30 pages about exactly what is going on and compares tropical forests to temperate forests.
Okay.
Take all the species of trees native to the United States and Canada and compare that to the number of species in a place like India. United States and Canada, landmass-wise, gigantic compared to India. Yet India has something like double or triple the number of tree species.
Wow.
Then go down to the tropics in Amazonia, and you'll find that there are another doubling of species in a much smaller space.
As compared to India?
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So when you compare, say, the tropical Amazonian rainforest to something like Oregon, it just blows us out of the water in terms of diversity. And I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, why is this? And there's a lot of different theories, but one of the ones that is most prevalent has to do with diseases, specifically parasites. In the tropics, If you have a disease, then if you make a baby that's right next to you, then it's likely that that baby is going to get that disease because you're so close.
Sure.
So the further afield that you are, the less likely you are going to get the disease from your same species because you're just too far away. It doesn't travel that quickly, that far.
Wow. So is that, is this implying that in the tropics there are just more parasitic species than in a temperate forest?
Kind of. What it really is implying in like the really intense crux is that there's more biological pressure that is coming to species in the Amazon. So that means there's more insects, there's more going on, there's more conditions conducive for fungus and bacteria and viruses and all that stuff.
Welcome to the jungle. You're gonna die, as the song says.
Yeah, man, that song, you just never knew how real it was. you're gonna die. That's such a good example. Thank you, Alex. But then if you come up to the Pacific Northwest, here in Oregon, let's say, the conditions are a little bit more extreme. So the plants actually have less to compete with biologically and more about their environment. So the trees up here, we have Douglas firs growing natively in forests, or rather we have forests filled with maybe 5 or 10 different species.
Yeah.
Natively, not plantations. This is just how they grow. And those species are more intensely contending with the environment. It's very cold, it's windy, and sometimes it gets really hot.
Ah, as opposed to contending with other species.
Exactly.
Of everything.
Precisely. And when it gets colder, you get less diversity, which is really strange. And he goes into this a little bit, and the factors are way too big for a podcast like ours to even remotely touch on. But essentially, it boils down to if you have more warm temperatures and you have more complex interactions because you have more things that are growing in these warmer temperatures, you end up like supercharging how diversity like diversifies, where literally diversity begets diversity.
Interesting. This is why it's so hard to live in LA. It's not it's not the weather, it's the people.
It's like there's just too much competition. I think it's fair.
They don't have to worry about you know, do I need to bundle up tonight?
Yeah,
so they just go out there and they're on the grind.
Yeah, that's I like that. Like, there's just down there, there's too much biological competition. Yeah. Whereas the further north you go, everyone's like, no, I'm not going to be here. It's too cold, yeah. Too rainy.
Everybody's inside.
Yeah. Well, so that is like the thing with these trees.
Wow.
Is that there is essentially parasites that are causing them to stay as far apart as they can. But that means, Alex, that they need this pollinator to go from tree A a third of a mile to tree B.
Wicked.
In order to pollinate it.
Very cool.
Yeah. So there's number one.
Oh, wow.
Number two is that European thing I was telling you about.
Uh-huh.
Europeans went to the tropics and they reported back to their European counterparts in Europe, it's a jungle out here.
You're gonna die.
You're gonna die. Untouched. There's no humans. It's just this wild, big, thick jungle. And we are learning. I mean, I say learning, but really we're accepting, maybe acknowledging, maybe finally saying, yeah, duh, that it was not the case.
Yeah.
Just like in North America, when they said, there's just land out here for the taking.
There's people everywhere.
It's like there are people that live there. They just live maybe differently than what you'd expect or what Europeans did.
Sure.
So turns out in the Amazon, there were many people living all over the place.
Yeah.
But they were inside of what, from the outside, looked like this gigantic jungle where no one ever was. Not to mention, a lot of those people probably got diseases, so they disappeared. And then nothing happened very quickly back then, except for the diseases. So somebody got a disease, spread it to this entire culture that did not have any immunity for it. Those people died. That happened on the Pacific coast here. It happened everywhere in North America and South America.
Yeah.
Then, if you're in the Amazonian tropical jungle, in no time is the forest going to take over that area. So then you go around, you're like, wow, no one's been here for millions of years. And really it's like, no, it's just been like 20 years and the jungle grew in, covered up what you would think about as a thing. But also if you're not, if you don't want to see it, you're not going to see it kind of thing. But now what we're doing is we're realizing with LIDAR, instead of cutting down all the forest, they use this very specific kind of camera technology, which essentially uses radar to look on the ground and see what the ground looks like.
Wow.
Between, or rather, it just gets rid of all of the kind of overstory vegetation.
Oh, wow.
So we can see that there are very like straight line canals and there's buildings and mounds and things that are like, well, someone did that. That's not how ground just develops in a perfect like U-shaped central plaza with radiating things coming out.
Sure.
Makes you think, well, that looks an awful lot like a city, doesn't it? No one's lived there, as far as we know, Europeans, for however long, hundreds of years at the minimum. So now they're putting together that things like the Brazil nut tree would have been growing there not because it needs to be 100% that far away, but that's where someone lived. And they said, man, this Brazil nut tree is really good. Planted it, cultivated it, and then planted another one a little bit further away at the next small village type.
Ah.
And then over there on that small village type, and then over there on that
one. Okay. So it's... It's let's take a breather here.
Let's take a breather.
The
it's very exciting.
This is simply for my sake. the way that the Brazil tree, the way that the Brazil nut tree grows, being a quarter mile away from the next Brazil nut tree, is a combination of these two things.
Very likely.
Okay.
Yes.
Of it being susceptible to, or just in the jungle, baby, being susceptible to parasitic species from its parent.
Yes.
So you want to make it over there.
Exactly. So naturally, the trees that survive will be greater distances away from the trees that would grow in between. So it's not like they wouldn't grow. They just don't make it. They get naturally selected out.
But also pre-colonial cultivation.
Yes. Definitely had something to do with it. So these two things put together help explain with a bunch of other things. Nothing is a monolith. There's... especially in a forest ecosystem like this, add indigenous people into the mix, which you can never just completely discount. And that's what we're realizing now.
Okay.
The complications just skyrocket, you know? You can have all these natural things happening and decide, oh, well, this parasite, this thing over here, okay, this natural system. And then you throw in humans doing cultivated things. Now you're like, well, we can't make any assumptions because there's people that have been managing it this entire time.
I am glad that we are living in a time, you and I, that like, as long as you and I have been alive, that these things are starting to be like critically looked at, you know, like the way that Europeans like documented who was here before they were, you know?
Yeah.
And like starting to kind of unpack it and be like, all right, what was really happening?
Yeah.
Because when you and I were kids, I feel like this work was being not done so much.
And if it was, it was just kind of ignored. So the same thing that I told everyone to go to by the New York Botanical Gardens, it was put out, I believe, in the early 90s, something like that.
Okay.
And when you go down and kind of read about the ecology and the distribution of it, it says here's, you know, a couple things about where it grows, and then has one line that says some people think that the native populations had something to do with this. Period.
Oh,
moving on.
God.
So it's like the work was being done, and there was some researchers who were like, you know, I'm pretty sure like either they talked to them or they saw the evidence and probably both and said, you know, this actually has a lot to do with the people who are here. And everyone's like, well, we can't really scientifically show that.
Yeah.
So like it really also shows the limitations of science, because science in the way that we do it now is all based on logic, where you have to say for 100%, this is because of this, and here are like all the limitations. So everything's very narrow, and you have to be able to account for everything in order to show not a correlation, but a causation, right?
Sure.
So with science, when you add in a variable like humans, we can't say for a specific reason that a human moves something here because that's what a human always does. We can say a river flows downhill, so we always know that things are going to flow downhill in a river system or something like that. Like, it's, there's a logic to that. But when you throw in humans, they're making their own decisions and we don't know why. So you can't give a basis to say, well, because humans are in the system and we know humans do this.
Right.
It's like, well, no, they don't. They do all sorts of crazy random shit.
We're creative.
Yeah.
Like, a river is not so much.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a very good point, Alex, is the creativity and also just the whatever they happen to do to live and survive.
Yeah.
So we can't, as soon as you throw that in there, it makes your science like completely useless because you can't say for certain X led to B led to D.
Totally.
Because then you throw in this other variable that you cannot account for. So I think that's what had to do with it. And of course, shall we remind ourselves that science, as we practice it today, is very much a European kind of centric idea.
Sure.
And it works really well in a lot of different situations. But in certain situations, you just can't apply the scientific method to certain things because it's just too complicated.
But the way science is built, it's like, well, if it doesn't fit within this explanation, this scientific explanation, then it's like impossible.
Yeah,
I guess, they
basically say, we think this, but we can't prove it. We can't show for certain. Yeah. And if you can't show for certain, then you can't say for certain
that it's true.
Exactly, which means you don't make a conclusion, even though it may be right, because you can't like expressly, just perfectly show it. Then you can't say it.
Right, like gravity is like a theory, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's a great example of that.
So it's all kind of a silly thing, but if you take a step back, Alex, which I think is what we are good at doing, and we say, okay, we get it. Why don't we just relax for a second and just make like a kind of generalized conclusion and say, people had a lot to do with this. Also, there's a biological thing that had to do with this, with the specific insects and the diseases. So all these things together create a really complex, diverse forest. Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Yeah, it is. And it's okay, but everyone wants like that next level. So I think if you just say, hey, this had to do with it, and then understand how it works now, now we can say, okay, great. I see that this parasite is a big deal, and I see that these people figured that out a long time ago, and they were managing it. Great, let's just do that. And that is what's happening today with the Brazil nut tree.
Interesting, Casey. That is great.
We took a step back.
Yeah, we're taking a step back. And Casey, I believe we have a correspondence coming in.
Oh my God!
Over the telegraph waves.
Hi, you're coming in now. You're coming in.
That's right. It's oh my God. It's I guess if I couldn't see them, I wouldn't be able to. It's Rhett and Danielle from Wild Green Streams, and I believe they're going to talk to us about their Brazil nut project. Casey, let's tune in.
Let's go out to the field.
We now interrupt your regularly scheduled broadleaf broadcast for a shameless plug. Let's get to the root of the matter.
I'm Rhett Barker.
And I'm Danielle Russell.
And we help run the social media group Wild Green Memes and its conservation nonprofit, Wild Green Future.
We're kicking off another year of collaboration with our Peruvian partners at the Alliance for Sustainable Amazon, or ASA. ASA has teamed up with local Brazil nut harvesters to protect the Amazon rainforest. Here's a quick rundown.
In a huge swath of rainforest known as the Brazil Nut Corridor, the Peruvian government protects large tracts of forest known as concessions. The families that collect Brazil nuts on these tracts are called concessionaires, and each has exclusive harvesting rights to their individual concessions. This area also serves as a bridge between several different national reserves and conservation areas, providing critical connections for wildlife in an area that is experiencing rapid deforestation.
So, why Brazil nuts? Brazil nut trees require intact rainforests for successful growth and productivity. Unlike many food plants, they cannot be farmed in a monocrop system. Rainforest areas that are designated Brazil nut concessions are protected from destructive economic practices. As long as the Brazil nut harvest remains financially sustainable, the government will continue to protect this region of intact rainforest.
However, in many areas, older trees are aging out, and not enough younger trees are growing to replace them. Our friends at the Alliance for a Sustainable Amazon are working in collaboration with the Brazilnut concessionaires to help grow and plant new Brazilnut trees in the forest, ensuring a future for both the Brazilnut harvest and the broader ecosystem. Every year, more families come forward to join the program, expanding its reach with each growing season.
Since partnering with the ASA in 2020, Wild Green Future has supported both the Brazilnut program and their other wonderful research and conservation efforts in the area. From their base of operations in Finca Las Piedras, ASA is reforesting land previously cleared for farming, researching forms of agroforestry that combine Brazilnut production with other sustainable crops, providing environmental education for local children and visiting college students, and conducting biodiversity research on the butterflies and other arthropods of the region. Thanks to the support of the Wild Green community, we have helped with infrastructure improvements, including a vivero or tree nursery, and field station facilities, as well as funding for an expanded staff.
Do you want to be a part of our nutty conservation quest? Wild Green Future's annual charity battle fundraiser is going on now. Everyone picks a gang based on their natural science or ecological grouping of choice, such as moss, opossums, rocks, velociraptors, whatever you can think of. These groups compete to raise the most money in the name of their gang.
You can learn more about it on our website at wildgreenfuture.org and make sure to follow Wild Green Future on Facebook and Instagram to keep tabs on the fundraiser. Together, we can work to create a wild green future.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Brazilnut. Brazilnut tree.
Yeah, we talked way more about the tree than the nut, honestly.
That's true. You know, if you want to experience the... Let me just say this. The Brazilnut is not something that you can just talk about. You have to experience it.
Yeah.
You do not know how gross these things are until you pop one in your mouth.
I didn't think that's what you were going to say. You think it's that bad, eh?
No, I'm being funny.
All right.
I'm exaggerating for comedic effect.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Obviously.
Apologize.
Casey, it's time to give her a review and a rating.
Let's
to this tree.
All right, I'm ready.
Here's how it works. We're going to give a final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we're going to mix it up and begin with you.
Oh, all right. This is new. I'm on stage.
I don't mean to throw you off.
Okay. So, you know what? I dig this tree.
Wow.
It's huge. It's a big tree.
It's a superlative tree.
164 feet if you just perfectly convert meters to feet.
Mm-hmm.
Gigantic tree. I love the idea that it's a long-lived tree, but it's also, I think it's long-lived for a tropical tree in that it's like 300 to 500 years kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then it starts to, you know, it falls over.
Sure.
You know, things happen.
It just falls apart.
It just does. You know, you're dealing with a lot of stuff down there.
The song says it, even to the trees, welcome to the jungle, you're going to die.
Exactly. It's one of the greatest songs ever written by any person ever.
It's a great song. It's got layers.
Yeah, it really does. As a quick aside, do you know what I heard happened, why Axl Rose wrote that song?
Why?
He got off a bus and he had fallen asleep on that bus in Los Angeles.
Mm.
And woke up and was like, oh God. And the bus was like, end of line, bro, get off. He got off and he was like, where am I? To like the first person who he walked up. And it was just some dude who just walked up to him and was like, you're in the jungle, baby. You're going to die.
Oh my
he was like,
God.
Okay. and then like hightailed it back to wherever
That's
he was going.
Fucking terrifying.
Isn't that great? So the Brazil nut tree, I dig that it's a superlative tree. It's gigantic. The nut itself, I think, is fascinating. The whole story of the tree, I think, is fascinating. Like, I just think that it's one of those things that it's intersecting between like 10,000 different things.
Mm.
There is a really unique flower and a unique pollination system for this tree.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Its fruit is a unique situation that is good for people, good for other things, and has a very particular like scatter hoarding habit like the white bark pine. Pretty fascinating. It also grows way far away in such an interesting way that it's like, wow, that is like a unique thing that you can connect different dots and like say, well, maybe people had to do with it. Maybe it just has to do with this like biological strict kind of way that things grow. Like the everything added together makes this for a cool, like unique tree that I would say, Alex, it should be planted more, but I don't think it should.
Ah, yes.
Because if you plant it more, they're just going to die. So
That's right.
It more, but also properly. Right tree for the right place, which is way the fuck over there. So I think I'm going to give this tree a 9.2.
All right.
Golden cones of honor.
Very good.
I just dig the heck out of it.
Awesome.
And I love seeing a giant tree do cool stuff. It's got it all. It's got it all. And the flavor, I think, is okay. I think you can take a nut, you can eat it, and you can be like, yeah, cool, okay. How many more are in there that I have to eat?
Get a cashew next.
Exactly. Yeah, get a cashew. Then you have too many cashews, and you're like, God, I just need some peanuts, man.
Yeah. Casey, 9.2 golden cones of honor.
That's what I have to say, Alex.
A fine score.
What do you think? You sarcastically don't like, but also I have a feeling that this sarcasm betrays a true feeling.
Well, I mean, I'll focus on the nut, the seed.
I didn't correct you. I didn't even make a face.
I was getting ahead of you.
Just ready for me to be like, Alex.
Not a nut. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not crazy about a Brazil nut. It's my least favorite in the... Actually, I don't even know if it's my least favorite in the mixed nuts.
Ooh, which one would be?
Like a dry, bad almond. Like, I feel like in those mixed nuts, the almonds are always kind of like, meh.
Well, hold on. Let's say that all the nuts are in their normal, like, average realm. Because I don't think it's fair to say that you don't like a nut because it tastes bad. Like, it's a bad version of that nut.
I'm sorry. The nuts in mixed nuts are worse nuts than if you buy a bag of one kind of nut.
Oh,
for
I
sure.
See. Okay.
But I understand your point. But, that, you know, I'm being practical here.
That's fair.
The tree itself, wow. Huge. That's cool. I like I like the height. I like the... I like the growing practices. I like the quirk with the big bees, you know, scooching in there to get some pollen. That's pretty cool. Flowers really weird. Tropical tree. Tropical trees are very interesting to me. Tropical trees. I don't want to be too like on the nose here, but tropical trees, like in A Song of Ice and Fire, whenever they mention people from like across the narrow sea, throw it like, or like, you know, a shy, like the Shadowlands.
Uh-huh.
So I feel about tropical trees. I'm like, whoa, like I don't even know what to do with my brain when I look at you, you know, like you're so interesting.
Yeah. It's very different than what you're normally seeing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
So different from my day-to-day tree, knowledge and experience. The pods are great. Those, what'd you call them? Not pods.
They're a capsule. They're a dry capsule.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do one day is grab one and throw it at something.
Oh, nice. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Like one of those like carnival games where you knock down the clown heads, you know?
That'd
be great.
Yeah. That'd be nice. I just want to, I want to know what it sounds like when it hits like a rock.
You know what, Casey? Speaking of what it sounds like, I can't say this for sure, but my I would put money on the fact that this is a local like musical instrument.
Oh,
that these dried pods, you shake them around, you got a little shaker.
Yeah, but what would they not like eat the nuts inside?
Well, I mean, yeah, a proper one would probably you wouldn't eat it and you would dry it.
So I suppose you're right.
You know, it's really husky and dry.
Yeah. I wonder if they shake because they're densely kind of packed in there. So I'd be curious if they like shrink it all.
Yeah. Let's not look too far into it.
Yeah.
But that's that's my working theory.
I think that's fair. It's a fair place to start.
I'm going
to
give it some points for that, for my theory. I'm going to give this like an 8.75.
8.75. Eight and three quarters.
It's very strong. But it doesn't quite get me to 9.
Doesn't get up there.
Not so much.
I think that's fair.
But it's a great tree. I love it. I'm loving it. Casey, that was our review. Wow. Of the Brazil nut tree. It's time for a game.
What?
That's right. A brand new one.
Oh, what's this one called?
More like a modification of an old one, but we don't have to say that.
All right, sure.
This one I'm calling the Kingswood.
Oh, God.
Cue some Game of Thrones music.
Because of copyright.
Nice. Here's how it works, Casey. You and I are both usurping kings. We come into power, we sit on the throne, and we realize, hey, we need a council. We need a king's council.
Okay.
But these kingdoms are populated entirely by trees.
Oh, it's my kind of kingdom.
If you're thinking this is convoluted.
Shut up.
Thank you. We have to populate our king's council or our kingswood with the trees that we find in this place.
I see.
Casey, we can have different sort of approaches to this.
Okay.
But here's what I imagine, that you have four counselors.
Yes.
You come to them with different questions. You get different opinions from each of them. They each have kind of a different take on issues.
Yeah. Okay.
And you want a well-rounded council, ideally, you know. So, Casey, here we are in our council chambers. Who are we going to elect to our Kingswood Council? We're going to do this in a draft style,
okay,
back and forth.
I was just going to ask. Okay.
We'll begin with you.
Wow. Well, that put me at the disadvantage then. I see. I will start with a blunt instrument because I want you to get a little fear.
Wow.
I am going to choose the giant sequoia.
Oh,
a tree that's going to just wreck you if you come close to it. It's big. It's tough. It's going to outgrow you. It's going to outpace you. And, you know, it's gosh dang pretty.
Okay. What is the sequoia's title? What title are you giving it?
I'm going to give it the title Master of Bole, B-O-L-E.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's big. It has a big bowl.
The Master of Bole. Okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. People are going to hate me for this.
Oh, no.
I am going to get the Tree of Heaven.
What?
One of the most voraciously invasive trees I can think of.
I am stunned.
Now, the Tree of Heaven will act as my Master of Sabotage.
Okay.
Think of it like this. I say, go to Casey's kingdom and just wreak havoc, okay? So it's going to go into your kingdom and it's going to put in seeds all over the place, and you're going to be pulling your hair out finding all of these little saplings you didn't know you had, and it's going to mess up your plans. It's going to distract you. It's a Master of Sabotage.
Okay. All right. Fine. Tree of Heaven. Wow, that's a play. That's a play. You're Master of Sabotage. Okay. Well, as the snake goes.
Yes. Okay.
What's next?
Well, I need somebody who's good with money and who is going to build me a strong economy, because wars are won not with soldiers, but with coin, as they say. So I hope people like this. So I've got to choose a tree that is economical.
Uh-huh.
Intelligent.
Okay.
And knows how to place its bets, so to speak. So I think I'm going to go with Bristlecone Pine.
The Bristlecone Pine.
Yes.
Now, why? How? Why?
The Bristlecone Pine placed a bet.
Okay.
At some point in our ecological timeline.
Uh-huh.
Said, I'll bet if I live up here that I will outlive everybody.
Okay.
And here we are thousands of years later.
Yeah.
And the Bristlecone Pine is like, see?
Yeah, still here.
So it's not so much it's good with money.
Yeah.
But it is smart, and it knows when to really go for it and when to take a step back.
I see.
I get that vibe from the Bristlecone.
Economical. Not necessarily money, just generally speaking. I feel like I should also come up with a good master of coin.
Wow.
An economically smart tree that knows exactly what to do and when to do it.
Oh my gosh.
But I would like one that is not only economical and can live for a long time, doesn't need to live forever. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to be very good with what it's done. So I want to choose the pedunculate oak.
Wow.
Now, I'm choosing the pedunculate oak because not only is it economical mm-hmm. in terms of its own ability to grow and survive and stay for a long time and put things and resources in the right place, I think that's good decision making and I want it on my council, but it is also generous to the people.
Wow.
It gives out food and you can go and live on its leaf and it's going to be like, hey, that's fine. You live on this leaf. That's mm-hmm. okay. Hey, here's an acorn. Now, yeah, I'm going to give you an acorn. You know what? Everybody gets acorns. And then the next year, Oak's like, sorry, don't get an acorn.
Sure.
You guys don't get an acorn this year because I gave you all my acorns next year. Or last year, what do you want from me?
And then the next year when it gives out acorns, everybody's so grateful.
Exactly.
Forgetting that it didn't get acorns last year.
Precisely. Yeah. So not Smart. Only is it economical, but it knows how to play the game.
Yeah, man.
So I'm going to choose the pedunculate oak.
Great choice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Why don't you you pick your next one here.
Okay.
And then
okay.
I'll pick my last one and that'll be the end of our council.
Three? We only get three?
We're getting three, Casey.
I see. Okay. All right. So my next one... I got a big bully tree that's going to take you over.
Yep.
I got a tree that is smart and economical,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have a saboteur, a tree that I think can take over and find you slowly but surely. So my last one, of course, is going to be fairly obvious. It's going to be a strangler fig.
Oh, great.
Strangler fig is going to he's going to be dropped by a bird. You're never mm-hmm. going to know it was there. Mm-hmm. You're going to be hanging out and all of a sudden your castles,
yeah.
your other tree soldiers
uh-huh.
are going to be sitting there growing and having a good time and all of a sudden realize, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's on me. And then slowly but surely, you're going to be strangled to death.
You wake up one day and your castle is like a Tibetan ruin.
Exactly. And I just took it over.
Yeah, pretty good.
I'm going to usurp you while I usurp this section of the kingdom that you and I are both usurping because, mm-hmm. you know, I can't live with just what I got.
And when you play the Game of Thrones,
you get strangled by a fig tree. There you go. That's
all right.
That's
a fine Kingswood, Casey.
Yeah, I feel like it's very, mine's aggressive. I got an aggressive Kingswood.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there you go.
It's my time for my last pick here.
Mm-hmm.
I need someone to keep the peace, to keep the king's peace.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Someone to keep the people happy.
Okay.
Someone to feed the people.
Oh, no.
Because I believe that, you know, a war cannot be won if there is a war being waged within your own kingdom, right?
Jeez.
So, my final pick for my Kingswood Council is Mango!
Jeez. Honestly, too flashy, Alex. I'm not surprised, obviously.
Well, the people love Mango.
They do. Everyone loves Mango.
I see a Marjorie Tyrell type.
I see.
Just, who goes into the orphanages and stuff, you know?
Yeah,
and
kisses all the babies.
Yes, and everybody's like, oh my God, we love her.
She's so great.
She's my Mango queen.
Huh, okay. This is very fair.
And that is my Kingswood Council. That is your Kingswood Council. And may the best king win. Casey, it is time for our completely arbitrary AMA.
Oh, right. The Ask Me Anything function on our Treemium service known as Treemium.
That's right. Casey, today we have a great question from M.
Hi, M.
Hi, M. M says, what would be on the syllabus if you guys taught an intro course on trees?
Whoa.
What books and articles do you recommend for someone who wanted to take Completely Arbitrary 101?
Wow.
Now,
oh my God. Okay. Are we working with terms or semesters here?
We're working on terms here, Case.
Okay.
So we've got 101, 102, and 103.
Okay. So we have a full year that we're dealing
with. Actually, no. You know what? Let's just focus on 101. So I think what's important here, because we're teaching the class together.
We are. Yeah. I think that's true.
Is that we make it very informative,
yeah,
but approachable.
Uh-huh.
So this is like the course that people, the students are like surprised they love so much.
Yeah. With two different instructors, Alex Cross and Casey Clapp.
That's right. I like the idea of this class being like, oh, I got to take something. Completely arbitrary 101.
Perfect.
But by the end of the term, they're like, that was the best class I've ever had.
I am now going to become a tree person.
Yes.
Yes.
So approachable, has good information, yep. but also will surprise you with the fun of
yeah.
it all. Yeah.
All right. Here's what I think. You can, this is how I think we should start. I think we should start with, here is a tree and here's how to identify it.
Great.
And at least every, let's say, just because, you know, I'm just making these things up. We meet twice a week for 2 hours.
Okay.
Mondays and Wednesdays.
Oh, Mondays and Wednesdays.
Yes. Okay. I like Mondays or maybe Tuesdays, Thursdays, either one.
Can we start at 10 though?
Yeah, of course. Oh, okay. No, yeah. Because everyone needs to be able to get up on whatever they were doing before and shake off their hangover yeah. and get there on time.
Yes.
No way are we going to get there before 10 o'clock,
no.
us, the instructors. Not because we're hungover.
Maybe I will.
We just like to do other things. Well, I'm not going to be...
Casey missed my...
You saying I'm going to get drunk every day? And
no,
then
no,
wake
no.
Up?
I'll be okay. there at 10. Casey will be there at 10:20.
Oh, I see. Wow. Thank you. I understand. I do all see it. Fine. Alex starts the course. I close it. Thanks, Alex. Okay. I think we should start on the first day,
uh-huh.
Mondays. I guess it doesn't matter. One day we are in the field looking at trees.
Great.
We're doing identification. We're talking about things. Here's
yes.
how it grows. Here's what a branch is. Here's how everything's functioning.
That's our lab.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next day, our second day, we're in the classroom and we're looking at pictures. We're looking at presentations and we're saying, here's some science. Like, here's how this works.
Great.
Here's all these things.
Maybe we use the things that we maybe collected from our field day.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, study.
Yeah. So like on Monday, hey, we're going to talk about this and flowers. Here's what a flower looks like. And then on Wednesday, we go out and we look at the flowers.
Sure.
You know, we actually see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Love it.
So that's how I would start. At least that's how I would frame everything.
Mm-hmm.
So each day or each week, we are learning how to identify a tree. Because I think that's the most important thing. When you go out and actually look at a tree, you identify it. That is the first best step.
Totally.
Then I would go throughout the entire year talking about, here is what a tree is. Here's a little bit. Here's the science of how they grow. Here's wood. Here's cambium, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, all that cool stuff. Then halfway through, I would say, now, how does that affect you?
Mm.
How do all these things interact with you personally?
Interesting.
Then at the end, I would put it up to a larger thing like, okay, now how does it affect everyone? How do forests function and how do we see that in culture and the ecosystems at large?
So you're kind of starting zoomed in,
yeah,
and then you zoom out a little bit,
yeah,
and then you zoom out when way out.
Yeah,
I think that's a great structure.
Yeah. And let's say we have 15, let's do a semester.
Okay.
So we have 15 weeks.
Who fucking cares?
Alex, it's important.
Whether it's a semester or a term or a trimester.
We were asked to do a syllabus, which means we have to plan things out week by week.
Well, we're not doing that, certainly.
No, but we should at least have some idea.
This is you and me meeting over lunch to first a rough, big, broad strokes.
Well, are we splitting things up by 3 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks final, or are we doing 15? 5 weeks, 5 weeks, 5 weeks final.
This is never going to work.
Well, if we split it up in thirds and we have fives, Alex, that makes it way easier.
Okay. Anyway, so I think we should do once a week.
Okay.
Some Croson's homework or Chrome work.
And
you have to watch one either movie
uh-huh.
or like a couple episodes of a show that you've never seen.
Okay.
That you think might have some trees or nature in it.
Ah, okay. See how it like maybe interacts?
Yeah, and kind of think about how that media portrays nature.
Mm-hmm.
What that media says about nature, you know, and I'll have a list.
Yeah,
it's so, not just anything.
That way people can say, yeah, okay, well, how do you see that people are interacting with the natural landscape in
yeah.
like this artistic cultural realm?
Yes.
And I would say every other week, I would be saying, now go out and see how people are interacting with trees in real life. So go to this park and tell me what people are doing.
Ah, there you go.
How is that an interaction between people and the forest?
Yeah, we can swap weeks maybe.
Whatever. Exactly, yeah.
Between clap work and chrome work.
Exactly, clap work and chrome work.
Mm-hmm.
Crow work.
And then we have, obviously, we need pop quizzes.
Yes, exactly, where we just give everyone a soda pop.
Wow. The pop quizzes, we give people a soda. We all just kick back and hang.
We just talk.
But you got to be there.
You got to be there, because if you're not, then you don't get credit.
Nope.
I think that sounds wonderful. The final at the end,
yes.
You have to identify trees. You're going to be tested, so you got to actually learn how to identify trees.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn the science about it. But at the end of it, I think that it should be a take-home written test about how trees, you pick the subject, we can give you some guidelines, and you need to say, here is how a tree or a tree-related thing impacts or affects something that appears unrelated, but in fact is a related topic.
Wow, I think that's great.
Okay, let's write this down.
Thank you, M, for your question. Hey, if you've got a question for us,
what a fun one.
Join up on Completely Arbitrary Tremium. Mm-hmm. It's at arbitrarypod.supercast.com. You get bonus audio episodes. You get bonus video episodes. You get monthly cone stickers by independent artists. And you get the knowledge that you are helping support a podcast that you love so much.
That's right.
Hosted by Casey Clapp and Alex Croson. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
Wow. You know what? I've got a hankering for a handful of mixed nuts.
Really? Uh-huh. I'm not surprised. That's all we talked about this entire day.
Yeah. Anytime we have an episode where we talk about a food,
yeah,
I inevitably end up wanting that food.
Exactly.
It's
a tragedy.
I think of it as a comedy, but I guess that's a matter of perspective.
I guess it is.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Hey, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
See you later.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. If you want to support this podcast and become a Tremium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.